Today is March 17th, and we have a recording with Edna Lawson at the 10 at Yukon Historical Society.
My family and how my mother and father finally came to Fairbanks. My father, who was William Frederick Kramer, K-R-A-M-E-R, where sometimes we're confused with the Creamers of Creamer's Dairy. He was always called Bill or Billy. And he was born and raised in Stuttgart, Germany. He traveled from Stuttgart to the United States, or America, as they called it at that time. And he had relatives in Missouri and who were developing farmland. So he arrived in Missouri and worked on the farms there. And he gradually worked his way up to the West Coast and finally arrived in Seattle. He worked in Seattle for a few years, and when, of course, the news of the gold rush in Dawson, Yukon Territory, and being a young man and the adventurous character that he was, he traveled with many other men and women on the steamship to Skagway and to Dawson, and this was in 1897. Well, of course, he did strike, or he did, state claims is the word I was trying to find, state claimed and prospected there the summer and fall of 1897. Well, he sort of run out of provisions and money, so he decided to take one of the last boats back from Skagway to Seattle and work the next winter to make enough money for provisions and an outfit to come back. So in the spring of 1898, he traveled back to Skagway and walked the Chilkoot Pass and the Dyea Trail, which was a long and treacherous trail, and it took a lot longer than it does for many who are walking it today. Well, then my mother, Catherine Kramer, Catherine Sherlock, a good old Irish name. She was born in Monaghan, Ireland, which is only about 4 miles out of Dublin, which is by car as of today, but I'm sure it took a lot longer by the route of travel that they used in the 1800s and early 1900s. And she had a sister by the name of Ellen Sherlock Ross, who had come to the United States much earlier and had married and was in Seattle at the time of the gold rush. So they were already in Dawson and were operating a hotel and a restaurant there. So what did her sister do? She wrote to her father and to Katie, as my mother was called, a name I did not like. But anyway, they wrote to her and said they were sending a ticket for her to come to Dawson. She was 18 years of age, and this was in 1902. So it was a long trek from Dublin to New York, to Seattle, to Skagway, to Dawson. And she was met in Dawson by her sister, and they would travel by a wagon over the trails to Dawson. Her entire trip from Dublin to Dawson took 30 days, but she said she enjoyed every minute of it and was real excited to get to see her sister, who she hadn't seen in quite some time. Well, she worked for her sister and her husband for a while, and then was offered a job with a doctor and his family who had 2 children, and she was their governess and lived with them. She had only planned to stay 3 months. She decided to stay in the winter and never got back home to Ireland. And of course, like I say, she was quite a young Irish gal, and she had a nice social calendar. She loved to dance. And at one time, at one of the gatherings, this is where she met my father, who was another wonderful dancer. And I was often told that they were among the best dancers on the floor at all times. I get sentimental when I start talking about this, That's why I say I have to read it. And at sometimes they would drive 40 miles to go to a dance, dressed in their fur coats, fur robes, and in a horse-drawn sleigh. And of course they were joined by many other couples to dance the night, throughout the night. By 1904, my father had decided to go to come to Fairbanks, where of course there was a gold discovery here by Felix Pedro in 1902. So he and my uncle Ed Ross decided to come to Fairbanks to see what it was like, and they left the women folks in Dawson. And he found a job here, and they both bought property with what gold that they had mined in the Dawson area. My father joined a partner by the name of Mr. Broadhagen, and they opened a cigar store and an ice cream parlor with those pretty little ice cream tables and chairs that they had at that time. This property was on 1st and 2nd Avenue across from the co-op. And there it was a street. The city finally bought part of his property and put the street through there, which was called Blanchfield Street. Do any of you remember that, Blanchfield Street? I believe it's just an alley now and part of a parking lot. And then my father owned property this side of it. I wish they had that property when the city was buying all that. But anyway, this is where he operated his cigar store and his ice cream parlor. And he also, in the summer months, he had a beer garden on 2nd Avenue. He owned the empty lot next to the cigar store on 2nd Avenue. So he opened up that and had an awning and a covering put over it and had a beer garden there in the summertime. It was quite a popular place. And then my father and Uncle Ed sent for my mother and his wife, Ellen, to come to Fairbanks. They had bought property between 5th and 6th on Wickersham. He bought quite a little property in that block there. And my mother and father were married here on March 6, 1906, in the little Presbyterian church that stands right here at Alaska Land. Then I was born Christmas Day, 1908. Now you know how old I am. So, and I was born in a little cabin that was situated there on 6th and Wickersham. It is no longer there now. It was only on a very small lot, about 25 by 50. And of course, they expected a boy, and they had the name Edward, named after my Uncle Edward Ross. So of course, they had to think about a name for me, what they were going to call me. Well, my father at the time was singing with a group here called the Harmony Club, and they performed, many, many times during the years that he sang. And it so happened, maybe you remember, the Heartland of the News Miner had a picture in there of a choral group that came from Dawson or came from Canada and put on a play here, they had a choral group as well during the Christmas holiday at the time I was born. And of course, my father and some of the men in that Harmony Club had a chance to sing with them. So, of course, after I was born and before the choral group left, I don't know how they got out of there or even got in here at that time. I have no idea. But anyway, they gave my father and mother a present for me, which was a little comb and brush. And on it, because I wasn't named yet, they called it For the Little Tycoon. And this was the name of the play that they had put on. So on this little brush and comb is The Little Tycoon. And well, then after that, I mentioned about the newspaper and that came out in the Heartland. I didn't bring it with me. I'm saving a lot of those pictures because they're just so precious to me, and I'm going to make a booklet out of it. The little cabin was getting a little small as my twin sisters were born at the time they were living in this little cabin on 6th and Wickersham. And so Daddy decided that it was time to look for another home. And he bought our home, our family home, which still stands on the corner of 1st and Kellum. It's the second house from the corner, and it is the one that has a moose rack and caribou racks on the porch. And the one at the peak of the roof is the one my father put there, and it is still there. And that's years and years ago. Well, anyway, and of course at this time, after my sisters were born in 1910, and my father bought this home in 1911, and my brother was expected at this time, not knowing it was going to be a boy, but anyway, my brother was born then in 1911. So mother was very happy to be in this home, a much larger home. And this was a home that was built by two homes that were built by Judge Kellum, our home, and the place next door that Ann Schick lived in. And that was built by Judge Kellum, and for whom Kellum Street is named after. And, let's see, I guess I'll go over here, all my scribbling here. And Ann Schick home was first owned by Henry Weir and his wife Cora. Mr. Weir was the manager of the telephone company here. And then it was later bought by Ann Schick, and who catered, you know, lunches and dinners. And I remember so well, after she'd have a big luncheon or a big dinner, she'd come next door to our house with all those goodies, cookies and cakes and casseroles. We certainly did appreciate that. Tell you, we just loved to have her come. And anytime she had asked any of us to do anything, we were right there and willing to help in any way, you know. My brother Bill, of course, was born, like I say, in 1911, and of course, Lewis' family had grown to four children, and mother and dad making six, so mother was glad to be in this larger home. I'll go on from here. I lost track here to where I am. As like I say, the home is now owned by a contractor. And then I'd like to say, my twin sisters were born in St. Joseph's Hospital, which was across the river at the time. And in those early days, we had floods during the breakup, you know. And as the ice went out, it was quite a spectacular event. And of course, in June, they usually have the breakup either late April or early May. And it was such a spectacular event, and the river would rise, and big ice cakes, and the crunching and the moaning of the ice coming down. It would always take out the Chena River Bridge. That bridge went out every year. The piling and the whole thing would just go floating down the river. And so, of course, this was June, and the bridge had not been rebuilt. So, of course, my mother and dad had to cross on a ferry to St. Joe's Hospital. However, she was able to get there in time, and, of course, it was quite a surprise to have twins. She had no idea that they were going to have twins. So, then, of course, later they did build the steel bridge that was there for many, many years, and I believe it's down in Kotzebue or up north somewhere now, and when they built the bridge that we have today. There was also a bridge across the Noise Slough, and that Noise Slough was situated where the Steeves and the College Road are off Illinois Street, and there was a Noise Slough there, and of course that bridge went out every year too, so they either had to have boats or canoes or something in order to get across there. I should also mention that the NC Company, and they owned the utilities at that time, Northern Commercial Company, as they were known, and we called it NC Company. And that was situated on 2nd and Turner, and where Nordstrom's is today. Everything, every day, of course, if you remember, they would blow the whistle. 6 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, 12 noon, and 1 o'clock, and then 6 o'clock at night. And that it was, we all looked for that. We knew then we were right on time. If we were going to go anywhere and be there, we were right on time. And also, these whistles were used for fires. And if you read about the big fire that they had here in 1906, shortly, well, it was right after my father had arrived here, and he did have property in the area. But his property, the fire just came up to his property, and it was saved. But at that time, the whistle would determine what area the fire was in. And the if there was lots of short whistles, they'd just pull that old whistle, short. And that was down in the downtown area. And anybody who could help to fight the fires were supposed to get down there as quickly as could be. Then on the east or the west, it was short and long and long and short whistles. So you always knew. And of course, our city limits were to 12th Avenue, and then down, maybe Bonnefield or something like that. Our city wasn't very large at that time, so everybody knew in what area it was. So they always would check up as if they weren't at home at the time. And then too, the NC Company, they maintained a skating rink on the Tina in front of the NC Company there. And it was very popular. They even strung electric lights and music out there. And like on Friday and Saturday nights, everyone would turn out with their skates. And they had a little old house down there, that a warm-up cabin, as you called it, where you could go in and change your skates and warm up. And then Sunday, of course, everybody was down on that rink. Well, then, however, in front of our family home, the Chena River, all the children in the neighborhood, like our family, and then the two Weir children, Henry Weir's two children, Henry and Marion, and others in the neighborhood, would go down and keep that rink clean for our own use. And every Friday, it just seemed like every Friday, it would snow. And we'd have the rink all cleared off, and then it would snow. So Friday night, we'd have to spend the evening clearing the snow off of the ice, and so we could all skate on Saturday. And then Saturday evening, my mother's house was always open. She always had hot chocolate and cake and cookies for everyone that wanted to come up to her home. Well, the ice, and of course then too, we always looked forward to the ice carnival and the big parade that we had. And they chose a pioneer king and queen, and then a young girl was chosen. They held a pageant, and a young girl was chosen from a girl chosen from Fairbanks, and then all over the state, and they'd have this pageant and choose their queen. The city took pride in decorating the streets and also the stores. And I remember one year they strung Japanese lanterns across the all the streets, and at night it was such a beautiful sight. And the ice throne, of course, was made of blocks of ice and illuminated with electric lights. And Louis Johnson was the electrician here at that time, and he really took a lot of pride in making it a very spectacular throne for the kings and the queens. And we had sculptors here who sculpted all kinds of animals and bears and everything out of the ice. And they were also electrically lighted. And people really enjoyed the evenings to walk downtown and see that throne and that city all decorated. They really, really took a lot of pride in turning out for those festivities. And then always on the last night of the carnival, we had the, those lights, what do you call them? Not lights, but the flares, the color, yes, that's what we had. Thank you. Well, then we always felt, with the dog races then too, we always felt we had a ringside seat of watching the dog races go by, because the dog teams always took off on the Chena River, and until such a time as the NC Company did not want to renew their contract. So in about the 40s, the city took over the municipal utilities, and so of course they no longer then could have the use the river at that time, because Fort Wainwright had come in and a lot of the water was draining into the river, and it was just not safe to hold the festivities on the river at that time. And then there was all about the late, well, the middle 20s and the 20s, I remember the tombolas that they put on here. And that was a fundraising to support the St. Joseph's Hospital. And I remember I had a teacher by the name of Susan Irwin, who was our French teacher. And she directed a chorus girl, a group of chorus girls, and which I was one of them. I think there were about six or eight of us. And we were dressed in little French-made costumes, little white aprons and little white hats. And we come out dancing on the stage, and we sang a French song in French, and was to the tune, I love you, je vous aime, je vous adore. I can't speak French anymore, coulez-vous encore, you know, but it really was fun and kicking our heels up, you know, and it was such fun to come out and do that. Well, we took part in that for several years in this tombola, which was a yearly event, and actually they put this on two nights, and it played to a packed house, and this was put on in the Moose Hall. And I don't know whether any of you remember the Moose Hall, and it had a beautiful balcony all the way around upstairs, and boxes right next to the stage, both downstairs and upstairs. And of course, they were for the socialites of the town. For those, they cost more. Those box seats did, and they.
That was
the,
on Wickerton Street?
Pardon?
Was that on Moose Hall on Wickerton Street?
I didn't hear you.
Was it on Wickerton Street? Where was Moose Hall?
Moose Hall was on 3rd and Wickersham, 2nd and Wickersham, between 2nd and Wickersham. It is no longer there. It's been torn down. It's just a vacant lot there now. But it was a nice building, and that's where all the mini dances were held, as well as in the Eagle Hall, which was located on 5th and Cushman, which is no longer there. But those were the two main men. There were enough people in town that they could have dances at both places. And people, of course, would go back and forth, you know, to the different ones. And, of course, their cloakrooms were not very large at that time. And you'd hang your clothes up, and then when you run out of hangers, well, you just put them anywhere. But never, no one ever lost a boot or clothes. And you know how we all had to walk to these dances. There was no transportation. And, of course, you'd put on your long johns if it was 20, 30, or 40 below. Nobody stayed home. You just went. And you put on your long johns under your long under your long dress and your fur coat and your mitts. But nobody ever lost a mitten or a scarf or a coat or a boot. We just all seemed to get collected together and all got home, you know. And I think that was something about being living here in Fairbanks at that time. Your doors were left open, and people were welcome to come in and out, and you never missed anything. You never missed anything at all. We were just one big, happy family, that was for sure. Well, then, there was one, one man that sang that was outstanding, and, of course, I will always remember, and his name was Vic Brown. He owned Brown's Jewelry Store. In fact, it was Avakoff and Brown's, and that was located where Zales is now, on the corner of 2nd and Cushman. Well, he came out singing with a top hat and a cane, singing Me and My Shadow. And, of course, they had a backdrop with the shadow crossing across the stage with him. It really was great. That was one of my favorite, performances of any of the shows that was put on at that time. And as I said, Vic Brown was in partnership with Harry Avakoff, and they called it Avakoff and Brown's Jewelry Store. Well, Fairbanks was, you know, a small community, but like I say, it was one happy family. And my father had made a large sleigh so that he could put us all in, all the four of us, in this large sleigh and take walks on Sunday morning, always Sunday morning after church and after we'd go home and have lunch. We'd all get in this, put this in the sleigh and wrapped up in fur robes and coats, and we'd take a long walk. And I happened to have a picture of this sled, and myself, I was a little older then and had to walk standing on the outside of the sled, and my sisters and my brother in it. My mother with her long coat and big hats. I don't know how they kept their ears warm at that time, these big hats that they wore, but I guess they did. And I think of the times, this is my family here, and I just have no idea how she could keep everything so beautifully white. And we were always dressed in white from top to toe. And they didn't have Clorox and detergents like they have today. Well, I know at a Saturday night, every Saturday night, Mother had a 50-gallon drum that stood in the far end of the kitchen that she filled with cold water and would settle it with lye. She'd put lye in a container and put boiling water in that, and it'd bubble up, and she'd pour that in. That'd take all the sediment and the minerals to the bottom of the barrel. And that's what she would rinse her clothes with. She'd wash in the other water, but she would rinse the clothes in that. So I guess that's how she kept them white. And we, of course, like I say, we all attended the Fairbanks Public School, which was situated on 8th and Cushman, where the administration offices are today. It was a little red schoolhouse there. You didn't teach in that, did you? No, that they had already built a new one by that time. Yes, that was after the fire. You weren't here during the fire, were you? No, that was 1932 when the November, it was December 1st, 1932 when it burned. And of course we walked to school from our home in the 1000 block out to 8th Avenue. Never thought anything about it. There was a post office where Nordstrom is now on 1st and Wickersham. First and Turner, and that end of the Nordstrom's, where the fashion division, I guess, is in there now, was the post office, and of course that's where we used to stop and go in and get warm on cold days. And of course we couldn't take a lunch. We all had to go home in warm weather, and we had to walk. So of course we had over an hour for lunch. But when it got to be 20 below, which of course we always wished for 20 below, so we could take our lunch. And we did have lots of cold weather, 20, 30, 40, 50 below weather. But we still, and I had a very good, almost perfect attendance throughout my school years. I missed very, very few days of school. I guess I must have been very healthy. My sisters and brother were not so fortunate, but I seemed to be the healthy one. And then, too, there was the 21st of June, which was a big celebration. And all the stores and was closed, and everybody took part in the celebration. They had a big parade, and the parade started on 1st Avenue, on 2nd Avenue, I should say. And it was just around the city area at the time. Then later on, when was the ballpark, where Weeks Field is today, and where the Borough Library and the Ween Library is today, they would form on 1st Avenue or 2nd Avenue and go out to the ballpark. And all the festivities took place there, and they played games, races of all kinds for young and old. Then the most, what we looked forward to was the tug of wars that they had. And I remember it was mostly composed of strong, big men, Norwegians and Swedes, and it was really fascinating to watch them pulling and tugging on that tug of war. Then at the baseball park there, they had car races there and horse races there also. And believe it or not, that is where I learned to drive a car, and that's where many, many people learned to drive a car, around that racetrack, going round and round and round and round. And of course, that was times during the week when it wasn't in use, you know, but there'd be many people out there. We wouldn't be by yourself at any time at all. You'd be out there learning to drive, go round and round and shifting and all this. But let's see, to go on from there. I graduated from high school in 1927 with a class of 13, 11 boys and 2 girls, myself and Jean Bunnell. Dr. Bunnell was the first president of the Agricultural College and School of Mines. And this locket that I'm wearing was a gift for my graduation present from Judge Clegg, and he mined that gold down in the Ruby District. And that was given to me in 1927, so you know how old that is and how precious that is to me. They tell me that the case that it is set in, there's just none that, you just can't find anything else like it today. It was in glass to begin with, but it cracked, and then it was replaced. Mr. Avakov replaced it with plastic. It's a plastic case today, but I wear it with great pride. And I should say that I attended the university, the college and school of mines, and rode the little trolley car that left the depot to the college, and had to walk up the hill from the foot of the hill to the one administration building. There was only the one administration building there, and where they held the classes, of course, too. And then they had a men's dorm and a women's dorm. And of course, no students that lived here in Fairbanks could live at those dorms, because they were for everyone that came in from either from the States or from within Alaska, Anchorage, Seward, Juneau, Ketchikan, Metlakatla, Sitka, Douglas, you know, and they all came from that area. And, I remember many, many times and having to break trail up that long trek. Of course, we'd let the boys and a lot of the men professors break the trail for us going up that long trail up to the university. And always coming home, if somebody was up at the top of the hill and the little trolley car was down there, someone always managed to drop their books and papers, so they'd have to pick them up and let us get down there in time to catch him. But I'm sure he would have waited for us. I'm sure he would have. Well, I played basketball on the girls' team during the winter of 27 and 28, and we traveled to Anchorage and Seward that year. And the boys' teams, they went as far as Juneau and Ketchikan, and played in Juneau and Ketchikan, and Metlakatla, and I'm not sure of the other places. But also on the steamship, on the steamboat with them, was Jeff Studdard, and he became their mascot. He just enjoyed those boys so much that he got off the boat in Juneau and watched them play, and stayed with them all the rest of the time. Well, then we girls, we traveled only to Anchorage and Seward, and so we were in Seward at the time the steamship docked, and they got off the ship carrying brooms. They had made a clean sweep. They hadn't lost the game. And of course, they asked us girls how we did. Well, we didn't do that well, and so they weren't very happy with us, but we did fairly well. Grace Clark was our coach. And I can't remember the name of the man that was the boys' coach, but there must have been about 20 of us, about 10 boys and I think 8 girls. Jean Bunnell, myself, Genevieve Parker. I just don't recall Genevieve's name, married name right now, but she married someone from the FE company and living back in Boston right now. And Helen Franklin, Helen McDonald from the McDonald family. And Lillian Crossan, who was the wife of Joe Crossan. And this sort of composed our basketball team. Well, when the boys docked in Seward, there had been a very heavy snowstorm, and the railroad was snowed in. They could not get through from Anchorage to Seward. This is when the trains ran from Fairbanks to Anchorage and to Seward. So, of course, we were kind of stranded. We'd run out of money. We didn't have any money to pay for our hotel and our restaurant expenses there. So we had put on a play at the university or the college before we left to raise money to make this trip. And so we decided that we'd go and ask the manager of the theater there if we could rent the theater and put on a show there. So Grace Clark had directed this show, and of course she was with us, so she helped us. And of course we didn't have any props, so I just don't even recall what in the world we used. But we also had a quartet with us, and of course they helped us out greatly. But anyway, we played to two packed houses, and we raised enough money to take care of our expenses for the 3 days that we had to stay over. And of course Jeff Studdard was enjoying this all with us. You know, he just fit right in. Then, of course, at that time, you know, the train stopped in Curry. So when we left Seward, we stopped in Curry overnight. And believe it or not, They had a big banquet for us there. And who sat at the head of the table? Jeff Studdard. And then when we got to the college the next day, the college had a big banquet for us too. And of course, mostly for the boys, because they had really done a great job. And among those, the boys that played was Jewel and Ted and Art Loftus and Jack Boswell. And I just don't recall right names. And there were others from Metlakatla and Juno and Douglas. I just don't recall their names right now. But anyway, it was quite an outstanding year for me anyway. And I attended the college then for 27 and 28 and 29 and 30. But however, in the meantime, after I graduated from high school, Mr. Weir, my next door neighbor, who was the telephone manager, offered me a job. He said he had just fired 3 telephone operators and he needed 3 right real quick. I said, oh, I could never be a telephone operator, never. Oh, yes, you can. You go down there right now. And his wife was an operator, and Eva Collins, and Nettie Omquist, and Mrs. Agnes Herring. And he said, you go down there and you start to learn all the numbers and the names. However, no one called anybody by name. They always called Mrs. Brown that lived at so-and-so, or Mrs. Smith, and so on. So you not only had to learn the names and the number, you had to know the numbers so you could plug in, you know, but you had to know the names. And of course we had an operator by the name of Margaret Brandt, a dear, dear lady, elderly woman. And of course she was always saying dearie and darling to the men that would call in, and people that call and say, want to call Mrs. Brown or somebody, and she said, oh dearie, she's at a card game at Mrs. Smith, and she's not at home. Or if you called a doctor, she knew where the doctor was. She knew where everybody was. She was actually, she just had a world of information. You could call in and ask her anything, and she knew it, but this is the way she did. Well, of course, after I learned to be an operator, I was on the swing shift. Well, that first summer, she fell and broke her hip. So then I went on, and she usually had the night shift. So I went on at night, and I was on from 10 o'clock at night to 8 o'clock in the morning, and that was a long shift, especially for between 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning to try to keep awake, you know. But I managed to do so, particularly, you know, in case of fire or anything, you really had to be on the ball. Well, anyway, after Mrs. Brandt recuperated, I went back on swing shift, and I still continued on at the college. And then the following summer, in the summer of 29, I believe it was 28 or 29, I also worked the swing shift, and then I worked for Pacific Alaska Airways, which later became Pan American. Jalmer Nordale was my boss, and Gladys Abel was the manager of the office. So I spent my time between the telephone office and the Pacific Alaska Airways. I wish I had continued on with Pan American, have the prices of fares today. But anyway, that office was situated on between 1st and 2nd on Cushman, where the Traveler's Gift Shop is now, in the center of that building. And they operated there for quite some long time. Well, then, I guess I told you who some of the operators were. Eva Collins and Nettie Omquist and Agnes Herring. Then in 1938, of course, in the meantime, I did marry and I had a son, his name Richard. And of course, he attended school here and graduated from the same school, Fairbanks High School, same as I did. He attended that school throughout on 8th and Cushman, of course. There was a fire there. In fact, that fire occurred, the reason I remember that date so well, I was in the hospital. I had just given birth to Dick and was still in the hospital in December. And I could see this building of this big fire, and I just knew it was the public school. And my father was the custodian at the time. And on real cold nights, he would stay there. And I was so worried that he was there in that building. And I couldn't get them to call my mother. and find out if he was home. I don't know why the nurse wouldn't do that. And so the next morning when my father walked into my room, I think I went into shock. I just thought I was seeing a ghost. I was so sure he was gone. But anyway, he was not in the building at the time. Well, anyway, as I say, I worked at, Dick graduated from that school as well. Then I went to work for Piggly Wiggly as a bookkeeper in 1938. And before that, I had worked in the fashion division of the Northern Commercial Company. I'd worked there really during the holidays, during Thanksgiving and Christmas. Then I went to work as a bookkeeper for Piggly Wiggly, and it was managed by Earl Hausman. And I noticed in the paper here just a few weeks ago where he passed away in Glendale, I believe, California. And that was owned by Odom. Mr. Odom owned the Piggly Wiggly stores here and in Anchorage. And then Earl Hausman managed it here. Well, then in the 1940s, I was offered a position with the Fairbanks Medical and Surgical Clinic. And I worked for Dr. Gillespie, Dr. Dick, Dr. Haglund, and Dr. Scheibel. And I worked there for 10 years until my daughter was born, our daughter Janine. And so that's some 35 years ago. And that's really just about it. It's been wonderful growing up here. I wouldn't want to live in any other place, really. Good? Pardon?
You worked in the school.
Oh, well, yes, I didn't include that. After Janine was 10, 11 years old, I went to work for the school district, and I was a secretary first at Hunter School for Rosamond Weller, and Dee Durst was the vice principal. And then the following year, they cut back the secretaries, and the secretaries had to work in two schools. So I was the last one that had been hired in the district. So I didn't have a job. And of course, I had met my goal. I was not able to attend my son's graduation from high school here in Fairbanks because my daughter was born the day before he graduated. So I vowed I would attend his college graduation if I had to crawl on my hands and knees. I was going to get there. So the winter of 1949 and the year of 49, I was looking for a job so I could travel to his graduation from medical school at the Portland Medical School in Portland, Oregon. And so this is how I come about that I got this job. And so when Rosamond told me I wouldn't have a job, that they'd hired, the other secretaries would be working two schools, and there wasn't that many schools here, and they had enough girls. Jerry Wall, I believe, was the nurse at Denali, and so she took over the position with Patty Haggard and Rosamond Weller. And so from then on, I had made my goal, and I'd made enough money to make my trip outside to Portland to see my son graduate from college. And that was a great day. Of course, my daughter was only, well, my son was, there were 17 years difference between my son and my daughter. And then the following year, though, in November, Dr. Ryan, who was the superintendent of schools, called me and said a position was open, the lady at Barnett and Nordale School was open. She was having to take her husband outside for medical reasons. So he said, the job is open for you if you'd like to take it. And he said, you don't have to work at both schools if you feel you can't do that. So I decided if I was going to work a half a day, I might as well work the full day. So I took the job here like that. And so the following year, they got full-time secretaries. And so I talked with Dr. Ryan and Mylon Baker, and I preferred Barnett because I could walk to that school from where I lived, where I would have to drive to Nordale School. So I was very lucky and very fortunate. I was become secretary at Barnett School and stayed there for 14 years, retired in 1974. And here I am. and I wouldn't want to be any other place in the world.
Did you say it only took your mother 30 days from Dublin?
Pardon?
Did it take your mother only 30 days?
30 days to Dawson. Mm-hmm. 30 days. Mm-hmm. I don't recall how long it took her to cross the Atlantic to New York. I have no idea. And then, of course, to cross the United States by train and on. Well, I hope I've given Ella a little bit back history.
You told us a little bit earlier about the ice pool.
Oh, yes. Well, it's just like the Nenana pool today. And, however, the minute pool, they had minute pools, and I don't think they have many minute pools today. I think the fire department, and my mouth it seems to be kind of dry, but I guess there isn't any water, is there? Well, anyway, there's a fountain over there. I can go over there. They had minute pools all over in the different cigar stores and stores and everything. And you'd go in and take a chance. And we took a chance on the number 39, and it won. And, of course, there was dollar pools, 50-cent pools, 25-cent pools. And, of course, on the dollar pools, you got $60, you see, on the chances with 60 minutes, you know. And of course, with the number of pools that were around town, we collected almost $1,000. And, of course, there was the Nenana pool, but we never won. But I had a sister, Margaret, that won, she and her husband. Oh, thank you. She and her husband won in about, it must have been 45, 46 back in there. Uh-huh. An old-timer down in Galena, her husband was working on the airport when they were putting in that airport at Galena. Her husband was working there, and an old-timer there brought over a whole bunch of tickets and said, Mrs. McHenry, you mark them. And she said, well, you'll have to give me some guesses. No, just put, you'd mark them. So she marked them and put his name on it. So it was divided three ways. And I don't recall, there were, I think, four or five tickets on it, so it was divided four or five ways. And I think maybe they may have got $10,000 that was divided between the three of them. Clyde missed it by 1 minute one time. My mother missed it by 1 minute. That's the way it goes. Well, I'll tell you a little bit about my pictures here. This is my family, my father and my mother, when we were growing up. Of course, we were king and queen here, 1983, golden days. This is my Aunt Ellen, my mother's sister. And this was a picture of my mother and father. They made their first trip to the States in 1939 after coming here in Fairbanks, 1906. My dad had never gone back to the States from 1898, or my mother in 1902. So they made their first trip and, of course, went on the Alaska Railroad by steamship, Alaska Steamship Company from Seward to Seattle. And I made one trip. I made my first trip out in 1941. I went out as a delegate to the assembly of the Go North Rebecca Lodge. And I had a nice trip out and crossed the Gulf. And I'm not a sailor. And so I had to spend my time out on deck. And believe it or not, the stewards always served me my meals out there when I just sitting in the dining room and just the natural pitch of the boat, you know, just the natural pitch. No matter where you sat, it seemed you were near a window. And I just couldn't avoid it at all. And I know the captain said to me, this is the smoothest sailing we've ever had. And here you're sick, you know. Well, I really wasn't sick, but I as long as I was outside and in the air, I was fine. Maybe it was imagination, I don't know, but to this day, I still can't ride a boat. I'd love to go on the Caribbean, take a Caribbean tour, but I don't think I could make it.
Did you not go to Ireland a couple of years ago?
And, well, yes, in 1981, it's 85, isn't it? 1981, my son was attending a medical meeting in Dublin, Ireland. So he said, Mother, this is your chance to make a trip to Dublin, Ireland. Come and go with us. He and his wife were making that trip to Dublin. So my sisters and I, we took a flight out of Anchorage. We flew then for $400 round trip. Imagine, wasn't that great? We just happened to hit it right. And we toured, we stopped in London and toured London and Scotland, Edinburgh and London. And Dick was already in Dublin attending the meetings there, so we had time to do this before we met him in Dublin. And he and his wife had already made a 3-month tour of Europe, so, and been in London too, so they weren't interested in doing it again. So of course he met us in Dublin, and that was quite a trip. We enjoyed that very much. And then he arranged for a minibus. I would tell you, if anybody would ever want to make the trip, have a minibus. Dick did not want to drive, so he arranged for a little Irish driver. He was a darling, and his Irish brogue and all. It took us a while to understand him, but he knew all the best places. But my daughter-in-law is quite a gal. When she goes anywhere, she gets the brochures of everything. And so we had an 11-day tour of Ireland with this minibus and driver. And we took in everything, stopped, you know. And we stopped at many bed and breakfast places. Oh, they were marvelous, wonderful food. And goodness sakes, we just gained pounds and pounds. You just couldn't pass up all that wonderful food. And however, we were there in Ireland at the time of the Sands. He was on a starvation diet, remember, in 81. And he had just died. Yes, he had died. And we were right close, and we had to go through Northern Ireland. We had to cross over. Monaghan is right on the edge of the Northern Ireland. So we had to cross through Northern Ireland, and it was well patrolled by the British and the Irish troops, and we had guns placed in our vehicle many times. But I'm sure when they saw my sisters and I had gray heads, they knew we were, there was no problem, so they'd usually let us go on, you know. And we arrived in Monaghan at the time this boy died, and it was hard for us to find a place to stay, and we could only stay the one night in this one place where we had reservations, because there was a funeral the next day and they were afraid of riots. And so the whole, everything in Monaghan was going to be closed. So we took a hotel out of the city called the Three Seasons, a lovely hotel, and we stayed there. And then the driver got word from his boss in Dublin to take the bus and get home, get back to Dublin as soon as possible. So we had to leave the next morning. But we did have a day and a half in Monaghan to look up and see some distant relative. There was one distant cousin we really wanted to see who was in his 90s, but we were not able to locate him. But we did see where my mother attended at the convent, Catholic convent in Monaghan, and where she lived and all that. But it was so sad that our trip was cut short that we couldn't have followed it on through. But we did get back to Dublin, and on our way there were many buses that were just burned, you know, everything just burned. It kind of give you a really eerie, scary, and glad to get back into Dublin, you know, at that time. And but we were never bothered in any way in any of the places where we stopped. And
don't you have
I have a twin sister, Amy, hit in Seward, and my other twin sister is in Chico, California, and my brother Bill is in Portland, Oregon. Yes. So my son is in Pendleton, Oregon, and he's a dermatologist. He specialized in dermatology and has been in Pendleton for about 14 years or so now. He has two children, Kenneth. I'll tell you a little bit about Kenneth. Can this grandma talk about her grandchildren? I have he has two children, Kenneth, 13, and a little Korean girl that they adopted. They only had the one child, so they adopted a little Korean girl, and she will be 12 this summer in July. And my daughter is married and lives in Eaton, Ohio, near Dayton, and she has two little girls, Allison, 6, and Amy, named after her Aunt Amy, 4 years of age. We visited with them during the Christmas holidays this past year. We are going to meet our son and and family in Fort Worth, Texas. We're going to have a family reunion with my husband's folks. Dick has never been to Texas, so he's going to meet them for the first time. And we're going to have a family reunion there during the children's spring vacation. So we're looking forward to that. And Clyde has consented to go. As you know, he's not a traveling man. And he loves his home, which I'm proud of. And he just as soon stay home, but he's going to go along with me. But my grandson, the past few summers, is quite an athlete, like his father was, as Lois remembers, and being the basketball player and track and also. Well, Kenny is following in his footsteps, and he seems to be a natural. And 4 years ago, he was 9 years old, and he tried out for a track meet, a 400-millimeter track meet, which he won, and he was the champion of 5 states, including Alaska. And he won the opportunity to go back to Charleston, West Virginia, to participate with the Western regions. He was with the Northwest region, and there were about 8 or 9 other regions that he competed with. Well, he was 9 years old, and he came in 6th that time. We were very proud that he even placed, you know. And this was for 9 and 10-year-olds, I believe. The next year he went as a 10-year-old. That year he won the bronze medal, and he was again the champion of 5 states, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, and Alaska. Then the following year he didn't go. He didn't go that following year. But this last year he tried out again and was again the champion. He went back to Hershey, Pennsylvania. This is a sports event that is put on by Hershey Company of Hershey, Pennsylvania. And he was the gold medal winner. Can you believe that? At 12 years old. Yeah. And his sister, Kathy, is a swimmer. Both their rooms have just got all kinds of ribbons and trophies of track, and he plays basketball, and he plays but he skates, and he swims, and all this. And like I say, they are one happy family. They all play together in skating and skiing and swimming and jogging. They jog every day. My son and his wife jog every morning before they go to work. My daughter only works one day a week in Dick's office, but they're up every morning 6 o'clock out jogging, and then on the weekends Dick and the whole family jog. And this past winter they had lots of snow in Pendleton, so they skied right out beside their door. They live right up on Skyline Drive, and there's a wheat field up above where they live, and they go skiing, and I say skating and all that. So I'm pretty proud of the family.